KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan, and you're listening to Radio Orbit. We'll be back in just a few minutes. KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. It is Radio Orbit. It's about 6 minutes after 11 p.m. on the 12th of March, 2007. Time just rolling right along. And that's a piece of music there by a band called Anchando It's called Anchando Style, actually, that song. We'll have more from them in a little while. And before we do anything else, though, first of all, our honors, of course. Thanks, Debbie Johnson, Free Range Radio Theater, On Air Radio Theater, every Monday, 10 p.m., an hour before this program. Check it out with Debbie every week. Before Debbie, of course, Kelvin and Jason, Jazz Plus Blues equals Sunspot Soliloquy. Tech Radio, as always, interesting, keeping us up on the quickly changing world of technology. Jeff Wheeler, everything getting going on Mondays, 3 p.m. with Jeff, Uncommon Light, until 5 every Monday. Great radio on KOPN, your imagination station. Glad to be here tonight with you, and glad to be a part of the whole business here, okay? So thanks to everyone who listened last week and participated in the program. A big thank you to Dr. Ralph Metzner, the Green Earth Foundation, Alchemical Divination, Personal Transformation. Dr. Ralph Metzner, an icon to anyone interested in the human potential movement over the last maybe four decades or so. So a big thank you very much to Dr. Metzner. It was a pleasure to have him on the program. And we also heard some great local music live in the studio last week. My good friend Noah Earle. Can't say enough about Noah. And he's doing great stuff, so check him out. If you're lucky enough to see him play live, do that. And if you can't, take a listen to his recorded material and listen to him that way. But if you missed the talk with Dr. Metzner or the music, anything you'd like to listen to, just check it out on the web. It's all there at MikeHagan, HAGAN.com. And you just have to sneak over there to the archives section of the website. And you can download it, listen to it, whatever, share it with your buddies. And let us know what you think about it, okay? All right, tonight, Dr. Willie Gaspar will be talking about the sun, solar cycles, Egyptian mythology, the Mayan calendar, the center of the galaxy, all kinds of different stuff with Willie Gaspar. That's coming up in about 50 minutes or so. I'm not sure what it all means. I'm not sure anyone does, but we'll talk about some of this stuff again tonight with Willie Gaspar. We've got some music from Anchando to listen to tonight, and we actually have some live music. I think it's going to come up in probably just a minute here. My friend Chris Perkins just wandered in. Not really. He was invited. And he's going to play a couple songs for us over the next, I don't know, half hour, 40 minutes or so. And speaking of music, we've had some great music over the last couple weeks. We had Cotton Mollies, someone that my friend Will here turned us on to a few weeks ago, and Noah was here last week. We've got Chris tonight, and Derek from In Thicket's going to be here soon. We've got a lot of good music planned for the next few months. We've got a lot of good things going on with regard to KOPN and music coming up over the summertime. We've got a benefit, actually, at the Blue Fugue on the 4th of May, which is a Friday night. It's going to be a lot of fun. Going to be, I don't know, three or four or five, six different bands, seven maybe, I don't know. We're going to start probably early, happy hour-ish, and go until they throw us out of there. So May 4th. Mark it on your calendars, all right? Big time rock and roll benefit for KOPN down at the Blue Fugue. I think we've sort of loosely titled it the Spring Thing. I don't know. I don't know if it's official or not, but you know, there's never anything official here at KOPN. So anyway, the Spring Thing, that's what we're calling it. And
hey, suggestions.
Yes, yeah. Send us your suggestions if you don't like that, all right? And we may or may not pay attention to them. All right, so put that on your calendar, one way or the other, whatever you call it. It's going to be a great show on the 4th of May. We have Caulfield and the Magic. John Henry's going to be there. In Thicket. The Cotton Mollies. I'm not sure who else. It was a great band that I just heard now. What are they called? Exit Clove. Exit Clove. They're playing right now, as a matter of fact. It's Monday night, about 12 minutes after 11. And I left the Blue Fugue 20 minutes ago, and they were just rocking it over there. These two twin girls who harmonize wonderfully with one another and a sort of a rock and roll background to them. Anyway, we'll have to see. Maybe them and who knows who else, but we'll have a great time on May 4th, all right? So mark your calendars. All right, what else? Well, Chris, hey, let me see. Get a microphone going there. What is that? We got all these new screens in here now, so I don't even know. Mic 2. There you go. Hi, Mike.
What's going on?
Wait, no. You're not Mike. I'm Mike.
You're Mike.
Nice to meet you, Mike. I mean, Chris.
My Jeez, friend. Nice to meet you, Chris. I mean, Mike.
Yeah, there we go. All right, it's Chris Perkins, and Chris is a friend of mine, singer-songwriter here in About Town. and just stopped in to say hi. How you doing, man?
Oh, I can't complain. How you been, buddy?
I'm all right. I was enjoying the music down at the Fugue, and I had to bail out of there and come down here. And
I know, man. So I almost had to take a rain check, man. They were awesome.
Yeah, that was really good. So
I'm pleasing anyway, to the eye, too.
Yeah, no doubt. Oh, yeah. Is my wife listening? I'm sure she is. Good. All right. So, Chris, before I get in too much trouble here, why don't you play a song for us, all right?
Cool.
Yeah, do it. And we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit in a few minutes.
What are we doing with these mics here? Am I just...
Yeah, take that one. Pull that one down a little bit. And we'll invite Laura in here. Come on in, Laura. I think we'll be fine.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. It's Chris Perkins. Listen to some live music here in the studio at KOPN. It's Mike of the Radio Orbit. We'll be back in just a few minutes. And we've got Willie Gaspar, Dr. Willie Gaspar, with us in about 45 minutes at the top of the hour at midnight, okay? So, back in just a few minutes. And this is Chris. What are you going to play for us, man?
Song I wrote with a buddy of mine back in the spring. Or I guess last spring. I guess like a year ago now.
All right, here it is.
Cool. Sunday morning, rain on the window, roll back over her, the place to be. Sunday morning, over easy, pack the bubbler, the place to be. Tuesday evening, woke on the I got to address everything. It's not one thing, but it's another. Makes me think I'm buying her ring. Thursday, Thursday, no tomorrow. It won't wait, wait, right again, leave. Starts to tell me her stories. Know exactly here, not to believe.
Thank you, Chris. All right, we'll have another bit of music from Chris in a few minutes here. We'll talk to him a little bit, too, find out what he's going to do with his tunes here. He's sort of just piddling around town. I'm going to make him sort of do something with it. So. All right, look, hello, everybody listening this evening on KOPN over the traditional airwaves or over the web now streaming, kopn.org. Wonderful to have the stream now from the station 24/7, and appreciate everyone who helped us, you know, make that happen. So we are streaming now on the web, kopn.org. Just click on the Listen Live button, and you'll get a nice 64K stream of the show whenever you want to hear it. It's a podcast as well. And if you want to listen to a slower bit rate, if you have maybe a dial-up connection or something like that, you can go over to CosmicWavesRadio.com, CosmicWavesRadio.com, and listen live there as well, okay? Thanks to everyone who makes it happen, both at KOPN and at Cosmic Waves, and also to my great friend Larry Norger, the web wizard. Couldn't do any of the stuff that we do on the website without Larry, and he's just a wonderful friend and a guy that is technically incredible as well, and a great musician and doing some great graphic and visual art as well. So he's in all kinds of different things these days. But thanks, Larry, for doing what you do for us, okay? Also, people out there who are sending music and poetry and art, all that stuff, thanks. Send more. We love it. We've got places on the site for all this stuff, and we'll share it with other people, all right? check it out if you want. Go to the web, MikeHagan.com. There's a place called the Poets Corner. There's a members gallery. There's a visual art area. There's, of course, the music archives and the music section where you can find information and links to all the artists that appear here on the program and links to their music and downloads and all that sort of stuff. And all that stuff is up on the web. And, you know, we don't charge you for it or anything like that. And you can also grab copies of the program, any of the shows that I've ever done, as long as we didn't have a technical problem. I think there's only two, maybe one. I know one for sure, but I think there's only, like, maybe two shows ever since I've been doing this program, you know, over 3 years now, that they're all up there on the web, and you just grab them and download them and share them, whatever, you know. Because there's some great stuff in there, and, you know, I don't know. Just do what you want with it. Yeah, really. That's my full intention, as as you know. So, anyway, if you want to get a hold of me and tell me you love me or you hate me or something in between, the email address is orbitradio@aol.com, and I appreciate any communication I get. Send email, all right? And to my guests and musicians as well, all these people, everyone around here likes to hear from the audience and wants to communicate back and forth and help, you know, improve their own art and get feedback on what they're doing. So feel free, you know, and the web and the communication technologies that we have now really give us the opportunity to really communicate with the people that we really want to. So, you know, if you hear something you like or you don't like, man, it's easy now to just say so, you know, say so and let them know. So you can email me, you can email any of my guests, they're easy to get a hold of. If you can't get a hold of them, send it to me, I'll make sure they get it. And same thing with musicians, if you like it or if you don't, you know, just send it to us. We'll be glad to sort of take the bitter pill or the sweet one, either way. All right, so on the web, Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com, and that's the way to get a hold of me, all right? Let's see, 20 after the hour, let me talk a little bit about some upcoming guests that are going to be coming on the show in the next few weeks, and then we'll have Chris play us another song. And I don't know, we'll do space weather. We got some news to talk about. And we'll have Willie Gaspar at the top of the hour, okay? All right, like I said, tonight, Willie Gaspar. He's written a number of books. I've got two of them that are sitting right here. Actually, they're not sitting right here, but they should be. One of them is called The Celestial Clock, and the other one is called The Sacred Cosmic Marriage. And Willie's a solar researcher primarily. He's interested in the sun. But he's also interested in mythology and ancient history. And his research into solar cycles had sort of led him to become interested in some of the old religious and traditional beliefs that were sun-centered. You know, there's a tremendous amount of our religious heritage that we carry around these days is actually, you know, the remnants of ancient sun-worshipping cults. And you can even see it in the Christian tradition, you know, the Son of God. And there are many of dates that are significant that correspond to things like equinoxes and solstices and, you know, solar-type events. So, at any rate, Willie was real interested in this and then started looking into the histories and began to try to connect, you know, some dots. And we'll let him sort of parse it out, whatever his notion is of what he thinks is happening and what he thinks some of the ancient peoples were trying to tell us in some of their writings and things they left behind, you know, obviously for someone to find. Okay? That's coming up. We've got next week, Dr. Jose Arguelles. Again, just really pleased to have Jose Arguelles on the program. I also have a great group of musicians to play next week, too. They're called Canal, and they're out of Boulder, Colorado, and I ran into them about a year ago, and that's great stuff. So we'll have Dr. Jose Arguelles and the music of Canal next week. Eric John Phelps the week after that on the 26th of March. And on the 3rd, we'll do something for Terrence. Okay? All right. You know, John Jenkins, I should mention that too, because he's been on my mind since I visited with him. Was it a week, just about a week or so ago? I spent some time in Colorado with John Jenkins, and we're going to get back on the air and do another show with John real soon. We haven't got the schedule quite worked out, but But he'll be back on the program probably in April, maybe in May, but I don't know, something soon, because he's got all kinds of really interesting new stuff that I think, you know, bears sharing with other people. Dr. Richard Tarnas, I'm not sure yet, but, you know, the author of Cosmos and Psyche, you know, an amazing guy, Dr. Richard Tarnas, hopefully on the program sometime in the next month or two. Dr. Patrick Flanagan, we'll see about that. Got an email from him today. Again, just a matter of scheduling. Susan Weed. I know. Susan Weed. I'll get her, all right? I'm trying. Send her an email, all right? Tell her to come on the program. Anyway, lots of other people. We'll see what happens in the next couple months, all right? But we've got some great stuff lined up just in the next couple weeks. And certainly next week with Jose Arguelles will be one that I hope you have your tape recorders running, okay? Okay, announcements. Albert Einstein. His birthday, as a matter of fact, was March 14th, 1879. So, little hats off to Albert Einstein, of course, the German-born theoretical physicist, recognized by many people as one of the most important physicists of all time. And you know, we're familiar with his theory of relativity, E equals mc squared, that whole business. But he did a whole lot of other things as well. And he just was he was as much a mystic as he was a scientist. And you don't hear that much about that side of him. But Albert Einstein, an amazing character in, you know, Western history over the last 100 years. And we'll say thanks to Albert for everything that he contributed, you know, tonight. You know, he was also pretty concerned about and opposed to war. And oppression and dictatorship and all this sort of thing. You know, it's interesting because of his relationship to the development of atomic physics and all that sort of thing, including Oppenheimer and that whole gang. Many of them, you know, were really opposed to all of that stuff. Einstein was willing to explore lots of approaches to try to confront the problems of political violence and, you know, he was a war resister at times. He certainly fought against the Nazi system, and interestingly, he was an advocate of world government. Anyway, a fan of Gandhi as well. I think he said something at one time about how he believed that Gandhi held the most enlightened views of every political person on the planet. So anyway, Albert Einstein, born in 1879, March 14th. All right, here's to him. One more thing, announcement. Actually, I mentioned the concert we're going to have on the 4th of May, on a Friday night at the Blue Fugue. That's going to be a lot of fun. And one other thing I should mention is that last week, believe it or not, I didn't mention the 36th anniversary of La Chorrera, the 4th of March, March 4th, as it were, 1971. The Holy House came down, and Terrence and Dennis McKenna went where I don't think anybody's ever been before, and the results of which we're still sort of awaiting, but tune in, you know. But I know none of you forgot it out there, La Chorrera. The roll around happened again just last week, and it's still just such a mystery what happened down there, and I don't think it's going to be a mystery forever. So, we'll see. All right? All right, let's take a little break here. We'll have Chris play us another song. And come back and we'll do Space Weather. All right? Hey, Chris, want to do another one?
Cool.
All right. Wake up over there, man. I'm putting you to sleep or what?
Not at all, man. You're just, like, overwhelming me with deep thought.
I don't know if it's a good thing or not, but... Anyway, this is Chris Perkins, and he's going to play a song for you on Radio Orbit. We'll be back in just a minute. It's Mike. It's KOPN 89.5 FM. What do you want to play, Chris?
It's a song called Wildfire. I read this in Washington. Down the mountain. Whoa.
it burns the ground below. Well, it up and burns, none of the seed will grow. Oh, sun water compressing. Oh, sun water compressing. Oh, sun water compressing. And it goes out with the tide. When the ocean swells, all the ships will
it's a cold either. All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5.
Flu.
Is that
the Lebanese flu?
Does that actually do with a turkey? All right, okay. Yeah, all right, all right. It's 11:30. It's Mike. You're listening to KOPN Radio Orbit, 89.5 FM, and that was Chris Perkins. Thanks, Chris, for the nice music tonight.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
What's the story with you and your tunes? You're back around town. You're playing a lot. You're hanging out and playing a little bit downtown Monday nights, I know. Do you have intention of doing anything else with your music?
You know, man, like, I need to get moving. I really have just been sort of coasting. It's like everybody else. What do you have to show for yourself, man?
No, not at all, but it's, you know, I know, you hang around with all these musicians, and you guys are all jamming together.
Oh,
so.
I just like to be seen with musicians. And I can talk to interesting people.
Really? Is that where they're at?
I mean, shit, or shoot, dude, why do you think I picked up a guitar?
Hold on, where's my delay button?
Yeah.
All right, sorry about that. Yeah, I know, I agree. I mean, I picked up a guitar not because, well, I don't know, I had a lot of reasons. Usually I was trying to block the things that other people were throwing at me. <You know? laughs> Because I was, like, small and couldn't catch anything round. So, anyway, we're digressing here just every moment. Let me say something about what I'm going to do here in a minute, all right? And we'll come back and play another song. He shakes his head as if that comes through on radio. There's a lot of head shaking going on right now, by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's do space weather, okay? If you're in Scandinavia or up north, Alaska, wherever, in the northern latitudes, be alert. Aurora is tonight and tomorrow. Big, gigantic solar wind stream should be hitting the Earth and the magnetic field sometime in the next 12 hours or so, probably. The weekend began sort of quiet on the sun, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the sun now because that's what Dr. Gaspar is going to be talking about for the rest of the program starting at midnight. But anyway, it was sort of quiet. You know, we watch this all the time. Kent Stedman over at Cyberspace Orbit, who's my, you know, great friend, and he and I have been hanging out long before the radio show came along and stuff, and we've been, you know, sun bugs for a long time. Ever since the SOHO satellite was launched and gave us, you know, this bird's eye view of the sun that anybody can watch, you know, if they have the gumption and the time, you know, and the, you know, it's sort of like fishing. You just have to sort of sit there you know. And every once in a while, though, something really interesting happens, though, right? You get a fish or whatever. But in the meantime, you just have a few beers and talk to your friends. But you know, so anyway, this is what Kent and I have done for years. And we watch the sun. And sometimes, you know, the big fish comes along. So anyway, Willie Gaspar is another guy who's been watching the sun, and he's much more sort of methodical about it than I am. I sort of watch it as an artist and just sort of go, wow, I know that's not normal or whatever. But this guy actually measures things and all that sort of thing. So we'll talk with Willie in just a little while. But as I was saying, over the weekend, the sun was sort of mellow. But just over the last 24 hours or so, this big, gigantic hydrogen cloud prominence sort of exploded off the northern section of the disk that we can see from the Earth here. And there have been some really beautiful photos that have been taken of it. And it's also been associated with this big solar wind that's now hitting the planet, our planet right now. And it's going to cause these amazing aurora borealis up there in the north, okay? So that's what's happening if you're interested in the sun. And there's, you know, sunspot watching is always interesting again, and we'll talk with Willie a little bit about that, but the sunspots are directly related, of course, to all this other activity. So anyway, what else? We had a full moon with an eclipse a little bit over a week ago. That was cool. On the 13th, we have Comet McNaught 2006 K3. This is not the same Comet McNaught as the one I've been talking about for months, but it was identified by the same guy. That's why they, you know, they name these things after the person that identified them. So anyway, that's going on up there in the heavens. There's the 7th Tri-Biology Forum that's going on in the Netherlands right now. I don't know what it is, but I thought it sounded cool, so I would mention it. The DGLR International Symposium to Moon and Beyond. The only reason I mention that is because I think it was a misprint. It should have been written in like 1969. Let's see, March 14th, the 7th Annual Kisachi Star Party. There's a bunch of star parties going on in the next month or two, or the next few weeks, I should say. Maybe it's because the equinox is coming up. The 45th anniversary of the first Titan rocket launch, 1962, on the 16th of March. What else? Another party in Fall Creeks, Tennessee. The Tennessee Spring Star Party coming up on the 16th. And what else? Oh, here's one for you. The 6th Annual International Astrophysics Conference on Turbulence and Nonlinear Processes in Astrophysical Plasmas. I just wanted to see if I could say that one. It's the only reason I have no idea what they're talking about. I'm not sure they do either. All Arizona Messier Marathon, that's going on, and the Messier Star Party, okay? So, I don't know. What else? Oh, Pluto, by the way, was discovered on March 13th, 1930. This guy named Clyde Tombaugh discovered Pluto, actually in February, and he was looking at these different plates. You know, they take photographs of the sky, and then they compare them to later photographs, you know, sort of lay one over the other, and when they see differences in the overlays, they know that that particular object or whatever is moving, and that's how they identify comets and planets and all this sort of thing. But this guy Clyde Tombaugh discovered Pluto in exactly that fashion back in February of 1930. And it was announced on March 13th. And that was actually, March 13th was also the date that William Herschel discovered Uranus in 1781. So what, like 50 years earlier? And Herschel made his announcement in April of 1781. And he thought he had found a comet, as a matter of fact. All right? So, anyway, it wasn't a comet. It was Uranus. So to speak. All right, look. I'm gonna have Chris play one more song for us here. And then I'll come back. And then I can get my guests on the telephone here, I think. And then we'll come back and do some news and get on with it. Top of the hour with Willie Gaspar, okay? All right.
You were juggling that going on here.
What's that?
Just juggling everything.
Ah, you know. It's That's the way it goes these days. You better be able to juggle, you know. All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest in the studio with me here, the lovely Lara. And we've got Chris Perkins playing guitar for us and singing some songs. Another one from Chris here, and we'll be back in a few minutes. It's Mike. Stick around.
Cool. Right, I'm going to do something I didn't write. That's all right, right? Like, I don't owe royalties or anything to cover.
Only a beer
and
me or something.
Right, I saw some band coming to my apartment. Probably wouldn't happen, but. Our guy named Mark Cohn wrote this.
Shooting stars are falling. Don't hold her when she can smell the jasmine in the air. Don't hold her when no one knows your calling. So I just say the words to keep her waiting there. Don't hold her when she is softly sleeping. Wake her to the sound of your voice whispering in it. Tell her all the secrets you've been keeping. Tell her to dry the river shade. Roll to silence underneath the moon, underneath the window. Put the house room, burn the blanket. Shoot the light, talk to her at night. Talk to her at night. Talk to her at night. Don't talk to her at night. Talk to her in thunder or in lightning. Talk to her with fuses blown and wires falling down. Talk to her in the fever is frightening. Burn in the bedroom in an evening gown. Wolf is island underneath the moon, underneath the window. Hotel room, burn the blanket. Shoot the light, talk to her at night. Talk to her at night. Talk to her at night. No, don't talk to her at night.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Chris Perkins now. What if somebody hears you on the radio here and says, I like that guy. I'd like to have him play at my party or at a gig or something. Is there any way to get in touch with you? You got a MySpace page, anything like that? Nothing?
Oh, man. I'm deliberately anonymous.
You're killing me. Yeah, through me. Everyone's got to go through me.
Like I said, I'm not a real musician.
All right, well. Anyway, Chris Perkins, if you want to get to him through me, apparently. And
if you dare,
no doubt. All right, well, this is your chance. What else you want to say? Anything?
I have to give a shout out to my boys at the Heidelberg, George and Kyle.
All right.
They wanted me to give some other shout out. I didn't remember it, but they're listening and they are newly converted fans.
So. All right, cool. What about political statements?
Political statements, man, I abstain from politics.
Okay.
I
was right. Good, smart young man.
Angry and depressed whenever that
there
comes up.
There you go. All right. All right, man. Well, thank you so much, Chris, and I'll catch up with you. All right?
Thanks, buddy.
All right, everybody. Chris Perkins, you can catch him out and about. You never know where or when, but if you want to find out, I guess just call me. all right, let's get on with business here. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And let's see. We did space weather. Let's talk a little bit about what's in the news. We have some time, actually, tonight. We've got like 15 minutes. So I'll go over here to the forum, and I'll see what people are posting right now. This one's great here. Sony brings real-life Matrix a step closer. Listen to this. Sony is preparing to unveil a simulated reality world in which PlayStation gamers can create a new life for themselves complete with their own apartment, friends, movies, shopping, and entertainment, bringing the reality of an actual Matrix a step closer. Sony has unveiled plans for its own virtual universe for the PlayStation 3. You know, by the way, the guy that introduced or invented the, not invented, but I guess the guy that put together the machine for the PlayStation 3 was quoted as saying something like, it was his way of sort of covertly putting a supercomputer into everybody's house. You know? So who knows what's going on. But anyway, listen to this. He says that the PlayStation 3 users will be able to socialize, shop, and even go to the movies, all without setting foot outside in the real world. Whatever that means. Who knows what's real anymore. The service, a kind of MySpace meets Linden Labs, Second Life meets the video sharing site YouTube, will become available for PS3 users worldwide in late 2007. So it's right around the corner. And Sony said that on Thursday. And it goes on, you know, to talk about this, that, and the other thing. I don't know. For me, I'm not, and I wrote this on the forum, actually. I commented on this when the people that were sort of chatting about it. But until we get, like, the holodeck, the Star Trek sort of holodeck thing, where you can literally walk in to another world, another reality, and have the physical experience of everything that happens there be, you know, no different than the physical experience of, you know, something that happened outside of that space. That's when I'll be impressed. Otherwise, I think that the best way to do something like that is probably pharmacologically induced. You know, you probably eat a plant. It's probably the best way to do that. You don't need the technology. Of course, you can't really judge where it's going to take you sometimes. It might not be the virtual reality of your own choosing, but it will be a virtual reality of some sort. That's for sure. All right, what else do I have here on my list here in the news? Scientists say nerves use sound, not electricity. Wow. Now, that's a pretty amazing one, actually, especially because I just mentioned this business of La Chorrera. And the people who are familiar with what happened to Dennis and Terrence down there know that the whole business was wrapped around sound. And anyway, this story here, and I only have the headline of it, says scientists say nerves use sound, not electricity. And that's sort of a new twist, for sure. We'll have to look into that. And I apologize for not being able to read any more of the article for you, but I just don't have the tech to pull it off right now, okay? Here's another one. Japanese researchers unveil medical mini robot. Now, this is great. They have this little, it looks like a beetle, actually, like a Japanese beetle. And I don't know if that was anything, you know, that was involved in the design or not. But anyway, it looks like a beetle, and it can crawl around in your body and perform medical, you know, interventions. Sort of like, remember that old movie? What's the, Ray Kurzweil and Terry Grossman, Dr. Terry Grossman. They wrote that book, Fantastic Voyage, right? And I interviewed Terry Grossman. And it's, you know, all about longevity and how, you know, how to live forever, essentially. But the title of the book, The Fantastic Voyage, was based on a movie that was made like in the late 60s, I'm guessing, maybe early 70s. But the premise of the film was they had these like doctor scientist types, and they shrunk them down with like a laser type device, and they made a miniature, and they had like a little spaceship, and all these, there were four or five sort of crew members on this little miniature spaceship that they shrunk down to the size of who knows what, and they put them in a syringe and then injected them into a person's body, and then they sort of cruised around in their little spaceship, like, oh, like through the ventricle of the heart and then move up through the lungs, and like, you know, T cells would be attacking them, and anyway, they would go like find a tumor and then zap the tumor, and it was pretty cool, you know. Story for back then. But anyway, this is like the real story now. Of course, science fiction usually precedes science fact. And now they have these devices. And this isn't the first one. I've seen a few of them over the last few years. But anyway, this is one that's been developed by some Japanese people, and it's like a little beetle that maybe you just leave it in you forever. You like get your beetle, and you know, and then it just sort of anytime anything happens or anytime you get sick, you just sick the beetle on it, yeah. Whatever it might be. You know, if you get a tumor, go get the beetle. If you get the flu, go get the flu bugs. You know, you get the whatever. You tell the beetle. The problem is talking to the beetle, apparently. So anyway, here's another story about speaking of insects. Listen to this: ants test nonviolence of Buddhist monks. This is great. There's a bunch of ants that are like invading a Buddhist temple, and so you know the Buddhists, they preach a nice game, you know, of you know don't kill or anything like that. But they're trying to kill all these ants. And so it's like, where do you draw the line, Mr. Buddhist? You know, where do you draw your line with respect to life? Okay? Right above the ants, apparently. So, anyway, good luck to both sides of that fight. I'm not picking a... I don't have a dog in that one. But I sort of got to go for the ants. I love that. Wouldn't that be funny if, like, the whole idea of Buddhism was taken down by a bunch of ants? All right, well, maybe not. To the Buddhists out there, I apologize. If you're, you know, no offense. Huge ocean discovered inside the earth.
Interesting.
Yeah. Huge. It's big. And they're telling us about what's happening on the other side of the universe. They just discovered this huge ocean in our own planet, okay? So when they tell you what's happening over there on Zenebel Ganubi, you know, take it with a grain of salt or a pound or a ton.
Think about how much is unexplored on our planet.
On our own planet. It's amazing, right? So anyway, here's one that they just discovered, this huge freshwater ocean, essentially, much deeper inside the planet than anyone ever imagined there would be water. So maybe it's probably bad news for the planet because that means someone's going to stick a straw in it. You know? But anyway, what else? Subliminal images impact brain. Ain't that the truth? They got a load of that like in the late 50s. And now we're going on like three or four generations of children who've been subjected to all this crap from the television and most of the other media sources that we have. And, you know, the result of that has been pretty self-evident. So, great job, all of you social engineers and manipulators of minds. Appreciate all the wonderful work you've done. Now you can just sort of sit back and wonder what you're going to do now. Because not even they will do your bidding. Because you've created a whole country of zombies. And when you have only zombies, well, then no one does your work for you. Because even the zombies look at you and say, screw you, I'm not going to do your work for you. Do your own thing, jerk. What else do we have here? Mayan priests to purify sight after bush visit. I'm not making this up. This is from Guatemala City. Mayan priests will purify a sacred archaeological site to eliminate bad spirits after President Bush visits next week, an official with close ties to the group said Thursday. Well, I'm going to stop there because I would ask the person with close ties to the group why you would let said bad spirit on your sacred land in the first place if you're worried about it, okay? That's a bunch of horse dookie. You can read right through that one. Let's see. What else? Big vibes from the center of the galaxy. Now, this is actually one that Kent Stedman posted up on the forum. And it's sort of relevant. Not sort of. It's certainly relevant because of what we're going to be speaking about with Willie Gaspar in just, I don't know, just 6 or 7 minutes here. But Kent made a post up on the site a couple of days ago, and I'll just read a snip from it here, but there's one section that says, scientists were startled when they discovered in 2004 that the center of the galaxy is emitting gamma rays with energies in the tens of trillions of electron volts. Now astrophysicists at the University of Arizona, Los Alamos National Laboratory, and if you remember, I should ask John Sheliak about this. Dr. John Sheliak, who was on the program just a couple weeks ago, you know, he's a scientist at Los Alamos working on nuclear fusion. So anyway, it says now astrophysicists at the University of Arizona, Los Alamos National Laboratory, and the University of Adelaide, Australia, have discovered a mechanism that might produce these high-energy gamma rays. And then Kent goes on to discuss a little bit about this, and there are other people that are commenting as well. In fact, I'll mention a comment from Dennis Thielman up here that says, there have been esoteric circles ranging from Nazi Germany to ancient Sumeria that refer to the center of the galaxy as the Black Sun, the life force. It is said to emanate from here. And then he gives a classical depiction of some of the imagery that's been used historically to describe this center of the galaxy, the Black Sun. Maybe that's because there's some sort of an energy source there that, you know, you can't see. Some people call it a black hole. People like Paul LaViolette would say that it's not a black hole. It's more of a generator of what he calls genic energy. Regardless, it's something special happening at the center of galaxies in general. The center of all these galaxies seem to be, you know, sort of where it's at. So, anyway, we'll talk with Willie Gaspar about that for sure in just a few minutes, because his expertise and interest is in the sun. And he's also interested in a lot of this ancient mythology and the center of the galaxy. So we'll do that. We'll come back in just about 5 minutes with Willie Gaspar. And I'll get a piece of music here for you. I want to play something from, if I can find the one I'm looking for. Let's see. Again, this is a band that is called Anchanda. And the track that I'm going to play for you right now. I'm not going to tell you the name. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Back in a minute with Willie Gaspar.
I go down. You're listening to Radio Orbit with Mike Hagan on KOPN 89.5 FM.
Everybody, hello, it is Mike. You are listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's straight up midnight now on the 13th of March, 2007. My guest tonight is Dr. Willie Gaspar. He's the author of a number of books, a couple of which I'm familiar with, The Celestial Clock being one of them, and another book called Sacred Cosmic Marriage. He's a man who's interested in the sun, among other things. And we're going to let him do a little bit more explaining about himself and where he comes from right now as we say hello and welcome to Radio Orbit. Willie Gaspar. Hi, Willie.
Oh, hi, Mike.
How are you? Thanks for being on the program.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. All right, Willie, to start things off, people may or may not be familiar with your work. So first things first, let's talk a little bit about you, how you got interested in the sun and the mythology that's involved therein. And sort of what got you where you are today.
Okay, let me start with where I come from. My parents came out in 1956 from Hungary after they had the revolution there. And so I was born in Pittsburgh, and then I wasn't even 4 years old. My parents decided they want to go back to Europe. So I ended up living in a communist country until I turned 23 years old.
So from the age from 4 until 23?
Correct. And so I forgot English and had to relearn it. So I was 23 when we came back with my wife and daughter. And we had to escape and dodge bullets on the Yugoslav-Italian border. So it was interesting. And we lived in an Italian refugee camp for about 8 months. And came to the States in 81, and since I didn't know English much, I said, well, maybe the way I learn it is I start evening school, go to English as a second language in a high school.
Right.
And so I did that for a year, and as I was going and trying to learn English, something strong came out to me. And I said, something is not right in the universe. And I don't know, I can't explain the feeling, but I went home, I told my wife, I said, you know, something's not right. She's looking at me, it's like, what's not right? I said, I don't know, something's not right in the universe. And she's like, okay, hon, just, you know, don't talk about this in front of other people, you know? And so as I was starting to learn a little bit more English, I would ask questions. Okay, you guys, what's going on? Something's not right. And they're like, what?
What do you mean?
What do you mean? What are you talking about? You know, you can't even speak English. What are you asking? It's like, I don't know what I'm asking, but I just have this feeling that something's not right. So we used to live in New Jersey, so near Rutgers University. So I started going into the library there, and they had 4,000-plus periodicals, and so I would go through geography or astronomy, you know, different kinds of periodicals, just looking through, and I said, what am I looking for? I don't even know what I'm looking for. And I got to the Ice Age section, and I said, that's it. So I went home, I told my wife, you know, it's the Ice Ages. She was looking at me again, like, okay, honey.
Yeah, whatever, yeah.
Do what you do. You know, go to college, you know, take some course, bring home some money. So that's how it started. I started looking into the Ice Age cycles, And on the graphs that they put out about the Antarctica, you know, initially the Vostok ice core drill down,
mm-hmm.
I've seen that we reached sort of plateau with the warming, and it almost seemed like on the graph that we're going to start a sudden cooling in the next decade.
Explain that to people who aren't familiar with the ice cores.
They drilled down a few miles deep in the Antarctic ice, and they found that there's a rhythm to this whole change in the weather patterns. And on a longer scale, there's about a 120,000-year period that you can divide either into 5 or 10 sections. If you divide it into 5, it's kind of like looking at your hands, and the fingers would be 4 cold ice ages, and then the thumb would be standing for the warm part.
Right. You do some interesting descriptions of the relationship between the hands and these sorts of things.
Right.
All right, so go on, please.
So, you know, and just as you said, I was looking at the hand, and I said, wait a minute. I mean, that looks kind of familiar to me as I was starting to take biology courses, and I got acquainted with the EKG readings. And so I pulled up some EKG results on the heartbeat, and I compared it to the ice ages, and I said, wait a minute, that looks pretty close. How come the heart has similar rhythms? And all of that led me to say the force has to come from somewhere.
Okay, so what do you mean the heart has a similar rhythm to the ice age cycle?
If you look at not a particular lead on the heart, but if you look at from a cardiology textbook, one average measurement that they show a T wave or ST segments or the heartbeat, QRS, it actually has a significant correlation scientifically to the ice age drill downs. I had the results ran through some mathematical correlations with a friend of mine who was a professor and had a PhD in mathematics. And I said, you know, before I go online with this, would you just look at it? Am I imagining this, or is this significant? And after he looked at it and showed it to some of his colleagues, he said, yeah, it's significant.
So it's sort of like a fractal or something then. In other words, the heartbeat obviously is something that's the heart beats over a short period of time. The ice age cycles are a long period of time, but there's some relationship between the cycles between between one heartbeat and another, for example.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, I'm certainly not an expert on ice ages, or, you know, a lot of the things I talk about I'm not an expert on. I'm a physician in internal medicine practice. And so a lot of these other things are just hobbies. But, you know, in school, you learn how to read scientific articles, how to evaluate certain things, how true or how not true they sound.
Right, right.
Because, you know, they can make anything sound true if they use the right tools.
Yeah, the right language.
Exactly.
Right? That's interesting because one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on the air is because you do have a great knack for looking at languages and sort of parsing out roots and this sort of thing of where words come from. And I think that's really important in this whole business of trying to figure out what ancient people were talking about. And to this day, like you mentioned, I mean, words and language, that's sort of, you know, it's sort of our blessing and our curse.
Right.
You know?
Right. And, you know, sometimes you have to ask yourself that goose in a galactic center whose Egyptian astronomical name is Sa, or the Persians would pronounce it as Shah, the prince. And in Egypt, it's the son of the sun, Sara. And, you know, sits in the galactic center as the cross. And, you know, you start looking at words like Santa, starts with an S-A. Mm-hmm. Then sacred starts with an S-A. Mm-hmm. And even Satan starts with S-A.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start going back to those words, and interestingly, the Egyptians used the goose to write some of these words. For example, the bad spirit, Sata, you know, probably that's where Satan comes from, is written with a goose, which is Sa, and Orion belt, which is Ta. And, you know, it's just interesting for those of you who listen to Mike's show, to start looking at some of these basic word roots and where they originate from. And, for example, why they picked a goose.
Yeah, why did they?
that's just my theory on this, but when... first of all, the galactic center has to be the controlling force for the solar system and, you know, the rest of the things that... circle around the galactic center. I mean, it's a common sense to me. And to NASA to come out just now, last few years, is sort of a shame, because I called a few astronomers, and they made fun of me. It's like, no, the galactic center is so far away, it cannot be connected to the weather on Earth or the controlling forces. It has nothing to do with the axis of the Earth and all that. When it, you know, when both of the axes perfectly line up north-south, you know, to that plane of the galactic Milky Way, you know. So, I mean, even a layperson can look at it and say, hey, you know, it's too coincidental that both of those axes are parallel.
Well, you know, and I think for most people, if they consider the sun, you know, that's something that we're all familiar with. It's the big burning ball of light that's up there, hopefully, every day. And its effect on our planet and the other planets in the solar system is profound, obviously. Without the sun, we can't exist, essentially.
Right.
And the other thing, you know, Willie, that I talk about on the show that few people recognize is that the sun is such a dominant force in the solar system,
right.
that whether people perceive it or not, that any time the sun has any sort of a change, it is fully effective upon the entire solar system. And so if you can recognize that, well, then the extrapolation, you know, from the sun out to the galactic center becomes sort of a similar thing. In other words, our solar system becomes no different than a planet. Basically,
right.
You know?
Right. And almost, you know, if you think about it as a trinity, you know, then the galactic center becomes the grandparents, the sun is our father, and whoever's going to come and visit us from the sun, as a sunspot eruption, is the sun. S-O-N.
Yeah.
So a lot of the mythology I write about, and people who are familiar with the Greco-Roman mythology know Helios, the sun, married an earth woman, and her son, Phaeton, was always sort of made fun of for not having a father until this earth woman said, well, you know, let me talk to your dad, which is the sun, Helios. And maybe see what he says, you know, I mean, you're his son. So it happened that she goes and talks to Helios and says, you know, he's your son, Phaeton, you know, and they're making fun of him and he's getting to be you know, older than a teenager. He's going to be a man, and, you know, that's not good. So Helios said, you know what? You're right. Why don't you send him to me, and then I talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what happened. Next day, Phaethon goes to the father, son, and then says, I'm your son, and, you know, they're making fun of me. Well, son, I really feel bad. Well, Dad, would you, like, really do something to make them understand that you're my dad? And, oh, yeah, anything, son, sure, you know. That's not a question. Okay, well, can I ride your chariot tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
And Helios says, well, you know, that's a little bit risky. You know, you can get too close to the earth and burn it up, or, you know, you have to be very careful. It's not for teenagers. So, but, Dad, you promised. Well, I did. So, okay. You know, he gets to ride the chariot of the sun, and he gets too close to the earth and burns it up. So what is that story about? You know, is it just something that the Greeks made up because they were bored? Does it have any scientific relevance to us?
Right. Well, what's your opinion on that?
Well, once you start looking at the, I call it the Trinity power lines. On the west, we have the galactic center, and then the equator of the galactic center, or the Milky Way, comes out and holds the two axes of the Earth, the magnetic north and the polar north, in a perfect parallel north to south direction. And then the sun on the east holds the core of the Earth in a 90-degree stabilization. So we know that a lot of these stories that come and identify markers in the galactic center, like the goose, or talk about the sun as the old king who will have a new prince, especially now when we are talking about the Maya calendar ending, and they say a new sun will be born,
Then
we have to pay attention to that. And not in a wacky way, but sort of as scientists and as spiritual people, you know. That's how I feel.
Well, many of the people that wrote this stuff that you're referencing were actually scientists.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
And so, and we know that some of them certainly had a great understanding of celestial workings and were familiar with the movements of the planets and the stars, and certainly familiar that something was going on in the center of the galaxy up there by Sagittarius and Scorpio points to it. Talk a little bit about where the center of the galaxy actually is and how that's referred to in some of the same writings.
Well, as you mentioned, Sagittarius, the main star that we identify as the center of the galaxy, is Sagittarius A. And so to me, when one reads the Bible and they talk about the horseman of the apocalypse, to me it's Sagittarius.
Ah, the horse, yeah.
And then, you know, very interesting that they talk about 200 million horsemen. And someone a little bit overzealous in the last century, or maybe this century, identified that as China. Oh, yeah, China will have 200 million soldiers.
Right, an army of 200 million people.
Yeah,
right.
Settling up, and like, okay. But it takes 200 million years for a full turn of our Milky Way galaxy. Now we know. It's 2-3 million years plus minus, but when they round it, they say a galactic turn is 200 million years.
So in other words, just like the Earth circles the Sun and our solar system, the entire thing circles the galactic center.
Yes.
And it takes 200 million years for that to happen one time? Is that what you're saying?
Well, 200 million years for the galaxy to turn back to the same point. Within that, the solar system is too small to be significant on that scale.
So the galaxy itself is rotating, and then the Earth and its system are revolving inside of that whole other sphere.
Correct.
Okay. Wow.
And I think the ancients just used the 200 million number to give us a clue that, wait a minute, at one point we might have had a technologically advanced society that knew that, that was able to determine that just like we just did. And so I think that's the clue there. I think where we have a little bit of misunderstanding is with the Mayan calendar, everybody's waiting for reaching the center of the galaxy with an alignment of the winter solstice sun.
What's your interpretation, as you know, just as an individual researcher? Give me your description, because everybody describes what's going to happen.
Yes.
As far as this alignment business, they sort of have a different way to describe it, and I'd be interested in hearing the way you describe it, because I think the more people hear different descriptions, and I think, you know, people are describing the same thing, but they have a different way of doing it. I'd appreciate it if you could do that for us.
Well, one is that, you know, it always depends what people want to hear. If they want to hear on a spiritual level what will happen, there are a lot of prophecies about that, and, you know, maybe we go into a different dimensions. And as a scientist, I don't want to spend too much time on that, because I can't, you know, I have my own beliefs, but I can't prove any of it. So I just let people think about that on their own. But on a physical level, every 6,000 years, we line up with the galactic center, how we are doing it now. So it's a 24,000-year procession in my book. And there's always a different season. Now it's the winter solstice sun. And some people who want to read upon it can find some articles on John Major Jenkins' site. Mm-hmm. You have to dig for it, but the information is there. But
yeah, and John, by the way, worked on your book, The Celestial Clock, I think, didn't he?
Correct.
Yes.
He was kind enough as a friend, as a mentor, to help me edit it and point out some of the impossible Hungarian sentences that I wrote. You know, I know what you're saying, but it's Hungarian, you know.
Right.
Okay. Just.
Yeah. Well, John. Yeah, John's great, and
he's a very giving person, and he's got a lot of knowledge.
Yeah, he really does. I actually spent some time. I was in Colorado just about a week and a half ago, and I spent some time with John at his place.
Excellent.
And I mentioned it on the air last week, but his library is just remarkable. And he's a real scholar, anyway, it's wonderful that you guys are collaborating. So that's that's great.
It's basically, I learn a lot from him, and you know, it's just really, you know, I love that relationship, and he's a giving person.
Hmm.
So,
I still have his jumper cables. I have to send them back to him.
I don't think he's gonna ask you back. Okay. But, you know, he talks about that a little bit. Every 6,000 years or so, we line up with the galactic center. And to me, the galactic center bulge, that super sun, you know, that black sun that you mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
is a 2.6 million solar mass. That's huge.
Mm.
And when we climbed that sacred mountain in mythology, it's a 36-year deal. And at 18 years, and the reason why I mentioned this, because those of you who study mythology, you have to realize that all of these kings and pharaohs were from the 18th dynasty. For example, in Egypt,
mm-hmm.
Akhenaton, who was the only pharaoh who subscribed to the monotheism, the one God rule,
mm-hmm.
which there's a hidden meaning to that, but he was from the 18th dynasty. And then when you go to the Chinese and the emperor who sort of got China together into one big nation was from the 18th dynasty. Hmm. And sometimes you wonder any of these people ever existed, you know. Mm-hmm. Or if they existed, will their life history be subject to the sacred numbers and be changed to reflect those numbers? So the Galactic Center is reached in May of 1998. And that's not the heart of the galaxy, because if you look at a human body, the heart is to the left. And that's how the galaxy is. So the heart of the galaxy that the Mayans talk about is the Dark Rift. Mm-hmm. And that's probably part of the sort of equator of the black hole. And that's being reached pretty much now in the next few years. And maybe starting this year or next year, we'll see some more serious resonations coming, maybe from the sun, or, you know, everybody's guess.
All right. Let's see. We've got a couple more minutes here before we take a break. Let's talk a little bit more about this idea that the central sun, the dark rift, whatever, this gigantic energy center that's in the center of the galaxy, let's talk about its relationship to our solar system. And as you mentioned earlier, there's a certain percentage of the scientific community that would sort of say that it's insignificant. There are other, maybe more, I would say, understanding people out there that realize the significance of it. And not just, the mythology is one thing, and the mythology to me supports common sense. It's like, there's probably another bigger sun that our galaxy rotates around.
Exactly.
And that one's probably just as important. So, maybe you could talk a little bit about this. It's like a fractal deal, but the relationship between all these things.
Well, as you said, there has to be another dimension beyond all these galaxies, because someone has to control that, you know. So, let's stay with our galaxy. If the center is controlled by a spiral pair, then if you follow a spiral path, you keep going out and out and out. So that is not a sustainable sort of rhythm. You know, it's just going to throw us out there.
Right, spin out into nowhere, yeah.
Exactly. So my theory is that there's a discharge-recharge mechanism that every system works on, you know, from heartbeat to you name it, cells regenerating or nerves firing or even human relations. So that half cycle is shown in the ice. So there's every sort of 12,000 year a change in a direction of warming in carbon dioxide level, methane level, and that's a fact. And global warming is going on every planet in our solar system, so human activity, as bad it is, probably minimal on what's coming as a big change. And
let's talk really quickly about other changes. In other words, you say it's happening on other planets, and I'm aware of some of the changes that have happened on Mars and Jupiter and Saturn and all this stuff. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's basically, I don't know more about it than you do, but as we read the scientific discoveries, they mention that there's global warming on Mars and most of the other planets. They document it, so it cannot be from small little Earth. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to come from a higher source.
And most likely the sun.
Most likely the sun, which is affected by the galactic center alignment. And I think of that alignment as sort of like a hot wire in the center. And then as we are approaching it, it gets a little bit more shocky. And once we reach that point, you know, it's going to be too late to reevaluate our thoughts about it, you know.
All right. All right, look, we're at the bottom of the hour. Let's take a little break here, okay?
Sure.
All right, everybody. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Dr. Willie Gaspar. You can find information about Dr. Gaspar on the web at www.celestialclock.com. That's celestialclock.com. And there's a number of interesting articles on the website there, and links to his books, and some interesting imagery. And you can go there directly from my site as well at Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com. And we'll come back and talk with Willie in just a few minutes, okay? In the meantime, we'll have another song here from this band that I just sort of ran across today, as a matter of fact. I hadn't seen my friend Casey in a long time, and we had lunch, well, sort of like a late lunch today, and he left it in my car, and I played it, and it's real good. So, anyway, I wasn't even expecting to do this, but they're called Anchanda, and this song is called Downtown. All right, it's Mike, and listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We'll be back in just about 3 minutes or so with Dr. Willie Gaspar. We're talking about the sun and, by association, what's happening down here on Planet 3. Back in just a minute. It's Mike, and listen to Radio Orbit. All right, it's another one from Anchando. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. That one's called Downtown. Speaking of downtown, that's where I'm at right now, sitting here in lovely downtown Columbia, 915 East Broadway. And at KOPN, we're always looking for people to help us out, in particular, airboard operators. KOPN is looking for volunteer airboard operators to fill various shifts, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., and it's fun. You can learn how to run the board in here and bring in national programming and do some local programming, too. And you get involved at the station, and you never know where that leads you. You know, if you have the gumption to get your own show or something like that, that's the way to sort of get in the door, because the first business is to learn how to use the equipment. And the best way to do that is to run the board during the day, during the national programming. NPR, BBC, oh, Democracy Now!, Diane Rehm, all that stuff's going on from 8 a.m. until 3 p.m. And we need people in here in the studio to make it all happen smoothly. So if you'd like to do it, give us a call down here at the station, 573-874-1139. And you can sort of talk to anyone, but I would recommend calling and talking to Jules, J-U-L-E-S, Jules, all right, 874-1139. Come on down here and get involved with KOPN, all right? All right, it's Mike, you listen to Radio Orbit, and it's about, well, 12:35 now on the 13th of March, 2007. My guest is Dr. Willie Gaspar. We're talking about the sun and cycles, and we'll get right back to him. Hi, Willie, how are you?
Hi, it was a good song.
Thank you. hey, okay, so let's talk a little bit more, okay, so about cycles, I guess, because apparently we're coming to the end of one of these cycles, right?
Yes, and how the graphs show, mainly the Antarctic drill down from the Russians called Vostok, mm-hmm. which means in Russian east. So, you know, they were down on the South Pole. Why they called it east, I don't know, but that's where the sun is. Hmm. And basically, it's hard to describe things in three dimension, but if you allow me, I'll try it.
Please.
If your listeners get a piece of paper and a pen and draw a circle, that's the Earth, and put inside the core, and then draw a line that would go to the east, where the sun is. It's a little bit of a failure because the two axes that I'm going to describe basically line up north to south.
Mm-hmm.
But the magnetic north, which represents the core of the Earth, stabilized by the sun, is... 12 o'clock north. And then if someone writes that in straight down to the core, to the center, straight line extending out above the circle, and then just from the outer circle drawing another line at 1 o'clock and sort of make that quarter a little bit accentuated, we'll get a letter K.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, I can only talk about my Hungarian language, but when I did that, I was playing with it, I realized that the stone we call Kő, K-O with two dots. So that's the foundation stone sitting inside the Earth. And if that 12 o'clock section shifts to the 1 o'clock section, to the polar north, magnetic north, and the core shifts to the polar north, which I think that's what mythology describes
mm-hmm.
in the language of astronomy and mythology. The K becomes a letter R, and the Ö with the umlaut, two dots, mm-hmm. becomes a letter O, R-O. So, you know, a lot of talk went on about the Da Vinci Code a few years ago, right?
Yeah, there was actually a question that just came up in the chat room when I peeked in there, and they said, I'd be curious to know what Willie's take on the Da Vinci Code is.
Well, they talk about the in the Da Vinci Code, they talk about a sacred line that runs north to south.
Hmm.
And a lot of mythology, let's say English mythology, talks about the war of the red rose and the white rose. It's easy to imagine that magnetic north would represent red because the lava from inside the core, and then the polar north because the snow there would represent the white color. And if one looks at Egyptian or Native American four colors, we see exactly that. We see north being red, mm-hmm. south being white, yellow for the sun on the east, mm-hmm.
and black for the west.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe those primitive people kept cosmic knowledge better than we did.
Mm. Almost certainly.
And so if you have that line connected with the K becoming an R on the surface of the earth as the K is connected, that's the red road, north to south. And so in the language, how we try to maintain that knowledge is almost every language keeps that as a color, red, R-O. In Spanish, it's rojo.
Mm-hmm.
In French, it's rouge, mm-hmm. but with an R-O.
In German, it's rot.
R-O-T. It's rot in German. Yeah. It's rosso in Italian.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can go on that and then start looking at, okay, we identified red. What about road? Does it start with an R-O?
Mm-hmm.
Sure it does. So our ancient ancestors who understood this tried to maintain that language, hoping that before the next one hits, we'll be able to decipher it.
The next what hits?
Well, the sunspot eruption. The birth of the son of the sun. Because even if you think about Christian mythology or writings, we hear it a lot of times that Christ, who probably to me represents the son of the sun, comes as a bright light.
Right, the sun, the light of God, the sun of God, S-U-N instead of S-O-N.
Exactly. And so a lot of times there is that statement that he comes as a bright light, he comes as an illumination.
Mm, yes.
And, so maybe that's a reference to the sun erupting. And a lot of the mythology explains that as a crown being given to the new prince, which in our language, it's K-O, R-O-N-A, Corona.
Hmm.
So again, you have the Ko as the beginning state, the Ro as the shift, and the N in Egyptian is basically shown as seven waves, which is eruption or resonation. And so a lot of languages Na. In our language, in Hungarian, N-A-P is the sun, Nap. So, you know, and, you know, I talk about Hungarian because that's what I know best, but probably other languages maintain that even the sun, S-U, standing for a south, in most languages, ends with an N. So maybe it's coincidence, maybe it's significant.
What about the word Kronos?
I'm not too sure, but that sounds,
you know, I see that the R-O and...
Exactly.
And it's a lot like Corona.
Right.
But anyway, but that is related to time. And, of course, the planet Saturn.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. It just sort of hit me.
Sure, sure. It has to relate to it. And I think what happened with one culture overtaking the other is that the K became C, mm-hmm. in Latin.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was transported to England. And so now, if you're looking at it from English point of view, it's more difficult to find those correlations because we changed the spelling.
So back to the Da Vinci Code for a second, that somehow they're coding this into that story, this celestial business?
Yeah, I'm not too sure how much Dan Brown knows about this or the editor, but, sure enough, a lot of the things that they talk about, the vitreous man. For example, if one takes the five-pointed star, it almost gives you that five division that we talked about earlier, that the ice age cycles and the heartbeat are divided into.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you spell core with a K, you get K-O-R-E,
mm-hmm.
and that's very similar. So I think the ancients did their best to maintain this knowledge. I think we forgot the science. The earth became flat, and now it's round again. Now we found our way in a galaxy, and I think those of us who are spiritually aware and scientists should not be afraid of going back and trying to crack that knowledge open again.
Right. Willie, there's a question here on the website about the Schumann resonance frequency that the Earth
right.
displays. And they ask if there was a connection between the Schumann resonance and these cycles that you found with, for example, the heartbeat and the galactic cycles. Is there anything to that?
Well, my understanding is that Schumann did his research in the 50s, and when he measured the resonance, it was about a 7.8. And now, as we are approaching the heart of the galaxy, it's closer to 13. So
the frequency is increasing.
Right.
That's amazing because, it's funny how much conflicting information is out there, because there are people that are proudly saying that the Schumann resonance frequency is decreasing and going to zero. In fact, some people are saying.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one, but.
Well, no, it's just crazy to me. But anyway.
Right.
So at any rate, that's something that's not. It's certainly not stable.
Right.
What does that mean? That it's not stable.
I think we are climbing the mountain of the galactic bulge with the alignment. As close we get to the center of that left heart in the galaxy, which is interestingly identified by the cross point of the Northern Cross, which is the Goose, as I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to look at this from the point of view of the Egyptians. And they said, how are we going to transmit this scientific information? We have to find an animal that is in the sky, like the forces we are dealing with, that navigates by electromagnetic forces, because that's what we are talking about,
mm-hmm.
and one animal that flies north to south. So that's what's going to happen to the magnetic axis. So they picked the goose, which represents those qualities. And the same thing happens with the other animals. The Egyptians picked the star constellation, which is the only one between magnetic north and polar north, as the crocodile. And they had a celebration. One of the most important ones is the opening of the mouth of the crocodile. Well, who closed it in the first place? Now we know that constellation as Draco the dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, if you start taking that apart, D stands for delta force, which is in an upside down five-pointed star. And again, someone can take out the pencil or pen and draw an upside-down five-pointed star and see the delta going south. And the upward pointing pyramid would be the female. And once someone start playing with that, a lot of words will come out of that, a lot of letters from that relation. And that's what the Egyptians utilized. The letter M comes out of that as a owl. And so if you want to say something with M in Egyptian, it starts with the hieroglyphic symbol of an M. And so our words for darkness, as the owl hunts in the dark, starts with muerta, murder, you know, and some other words.
Moon.
But, you know, something interesting to look at. But basically, people who are strong Christians can go to the Bible and say, well, you know, I want to find this information that he's talking about in my Bible. It's very easy because chapter 11 of Revelation says that God made two olive trees or two lampstands stand in front of him as the witnesses to what's coming. And so he says in the book that there are two olive trees that have power over heaven to shut down. There then comes, in the next paragraph, a red fiery dragon who with his tail pulls one-third of the stars from the sky. So again, if you visualize that as magnetic north shifting to the polar north, you have your answer. And then you go a little further. Let's say you go to Jeremiah, who's talking to the Lord, and the Lord says, Jeremiah, what are you watching? Well, I'm looking to the north. Well, what's at the north? Well, there's a boiling pot. What is it doing? It's tilting to the south. So, yeah, some people might say, well, you know, coincidences. But to me, those are hidden cosmological teachings.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, the idea that there's so many of them that come together and sort of point to the same thing is what's always amazed me, you know.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit more about those connections then, because you've been talking about the Egyptian now. Talk a little bit more about the connections between the Maya and the Egyptian. You know, people are familiar with the Maya talking, you know, there's a whole, all this business of 2012 these days, you know.
Right.
And everyone's talking about that. But I'm not sure that that the Egyptians are particularly you know, connected to that in the public consciousness that the Maya are, but do the Egyptians have a mythology that points to this time as well as being a time of great change or upheaval or solar imbalance or whatever?
Certainly they do. It's not as clear as the Mayans did. They were smarter. They sort of made up a calendar that ends at this time as a warning. The Egyptians did a little bit different, and unfortunately we are misled by the Egyptologist representing these pharaohs and their animal depictions as history. And so to me, none of this is history. These are all cosmic forces written down. And they made sure that the animals, for example, Horus, the hawk-headed prince, the son of Osiris, the main god, right?
Right.
He's got a human body and a hawk head. And then you say, wait a minute, it's not a hawk because it's got two legs. Well, it cannot be a human because he's got a hawk head. So that's what the Greeks did with their so-called gods. They made them into sort of a genetic freaks of half human, half animal, so people would not think that we are talking about history. And that changed 2,000 years ago, where everything became human and history. So somehow the word got transmitted, but the meaning got lost.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the time to go back to it and not be afraid. You know, God is, Creator is too big for us to be worried about, you know, what we say. The forces are enormous, and all these writings contain wisdom, and if someone looks at it that way, I think they get a lot of knowledge out of it.
What what do you make of the language that talks about the flood? There's, you talk about a cosmic language of the ancients, and the story that you talk about on the website begins with the flood of Noah that was maybe, I don't know, 11 or 12,000 years ago.
Right. You know, those stories are present in the Hindu religion, present in Native American creation stories. And, you know, it's interesting if someone picks up a book on, let's say, Navajo folk tales, mm-hmm. and picks out the creation story. Instead of seeing a goose there, they have a wild turkey who start hissing and warning the people of the impending flood. And I think it's very universal. I think it's a baptism of the earth every about 12,000 years. I don't think that the changes, the sudden changes that we potentially talk about that can happen from global warming to a sudden global cooling can happen without the flood. And, you know, the Hindus put it very interesting because they call this event that happened in the past the fiery mare.
Hmm.
For them, there's a race going on with two coursers, two horses running. And it's a horse race. And then when the sun erupts with the energy of 10,000 suns, the only way we are able to neutralize that is that we have a huge ocean. So the fiery mare of the gods sort of sent into the ocean where it's going to cool down.
Mm-hmm.
And so anybody who's interested must buy that Hindu Myths from Penguin Classic. It's a really good book. All the stories talk about this event that they collected. And very interesting that even the water turning to blood or red color is there, which one can see if the magnetic north shifts to the polar north. Certainly there will be a lot of underwater volcanism erupting, sulfuric water, and the color change. And so we certainly cannot get that from the Catholic religion where the priest drinks the wine, the red wine, as Christ's blood. And, you know, I'm nothing against it. I grew up Catholic, and a lot of my friends are.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think that the teaching itself or the scripture itself is wrong. What's wrong is that we allowed uneducated people who truly were not raw priests by education, to allow them to interpret the sacred message, you know, without the knowledge of science. And so I think that's where we went wrong. And in my book, I write a little bit about it, that my son and I went to a sort of a Bible study in a small town in New Mexico. There was an internationally known Bible scholar who said, he'll come and explain Revelation. I said, wow, I want to hear that.
Right.
Well, that was before I started writing my book. And so this guy comes, and he says, well, you know, in Revelation, they talk about the beast from the ocean. Well, that was the boat that sank in 1912.
Hmm.
So I'm like, yeah, maybe, maybe not. And as he went on, and he said, you know, the bear is Russia in a third world war scenario. And I said, wait a minute. I mean, I've been in Santa Fe, and I've seen the Pueblo Indians having the sacred bear, and that certainly does not sound right that they were praying to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I knew about the Polaris being the bear, and then I started looking at the Magnetic North, Vega, and its Arabic name is the Swooping Hawk.
Mm-hmm.
And as further you go on that clock that I mentioned earlier, the 12 o'clock and 1 o'clock,
uh-huh.
At 12 o'clock in mid-September, if you look up to the sky to the north, you see the goose right above Vega,
huh.
The hawk.
Right.
Then you see at 1 o'clock Cassiopeia, the throne. And then it kind of hit me, okay, how would the Egyptians do that? And I started looking at the Egyptian books, and I found that the hawk always sits down on the throne. And I said, okay, I know what he's doing sitting down.
All right, look, Willie, it's top of the hour. Let's take a break here, okay? We'll come back and talk about some more of this stuff.
Okay.
All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Dr. Willie Gaspar. You can find information about Willie on the web at www.celestialclock.com, and you can link there from my site at mikehagan.com as well. And you're listening to the show on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, and streaming live on the web at kopn.org. All right? Okay, let's see here. Let's play another song from Anchanda, my newly discovered band that I came across this afternoon. This one is called, appropriately, Heart and Soul. It's about 4.5 minutes, so we got time for me to go get a glass of water and make a quick, there's some phone calls that I need to answer here, and then we'll come back with Willie Gaspar in just a few minutes, all right? It's Mike, you listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM.
Baby, come with me, Cause I just wanna see you want me to, and I belong to you. My stuff, my breath, I couldn't talk, God knows. And I wanna hold you forever and never let you go. With all my heart and soul, I think I love you, but I don't know. I don't know, but I wanna love you with my heart and soul. I pray to the Lord above that you can feel all of my love. All I want is you would share. God knows, and I wanna hold you forever and never let you go. With all my heart and soul, I think I love you, but I don't know. I
there you go. A nice, pretty song there from Anchando. And we'll hear another song or two before we head out the end of the program here with those guys, okay? It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. And I have a announcement here I need to read to y'all here real quick. And it's sort of a fun one, actually. Big news here, actually. This is a great interview. KOPN's World Woman, with the financial assistance of the City of Columbia Department of Cultural Affairs, is proud to air Lynn Harris's interview with Maya Angelou. And you'll get to hear Maya recite some poetry and sing a little bit, tell some stories, and talk a little bit about what her writing and poetry means to her as well, where some of it comes from. And she talks a little bit about prejudices and racism and ageism, sexism. All this coming up on April 1st at 5 p.m. on World Woman here on KOPN, all right? 89.5 FM KOPN. And you can catch us always on the web streaming at kopn.org, all right? All right, it's Mike, and you are listening to Radio Orbit. Let's get back now to Dr. Willie Gaspar. We're talking about the sun and what it does from time to time. So, Willie, first of all, thank you for sticking around with us. Let's talk a little bit now about what the effects of this might be. In other words, if I understand correctly, your essential notion is that because of changes in galactic energy, you know, without getting too specific, the sun is affected. And the sun then does something. I don't know if it's a one-time event or if it's something that happens slowly over time, but the Earth is then affected, and then we have a pole shift of sorts. Is this one of the things you're expecting, perhaps?
Correct.
A magnetic pole shift or an actual physical pole shift?
An actual shift where the core turns to the polar north, as the magnetic north from 12 o'clock goes to 1 o'clock.
Goes to 1 o'clock, like we've been talking about, yeah.
And that's, you know, just those of you who are Freemasons out there, if you draw that up from the center you see a symbol that you see commonly on Freemasonic lodges, and that's the compass. Should be written with a K-O, but it's a C-O. And that compass, right, points to the north, both norths.
Right.
Actually, from the 13th century, we have Christ on a manuscript shown measuring those points on the earth. And, you know, to put another interesting number in here is the distance between magnetic north and polar north currently is 23.4 degrees.
Okay, so if people want to visualize that, if you drew a line from the magnetic north pole straight through the earth, it would be 24 degrees
right
off of the line that you drew.
Starting from the center of the earth, straight line up to 12 o'clock, mm-hmm. and another straight line up to 1 o'clock would give you a compass, and that's 23.4 degrees.
Okay, and so that's basically the difference between 12 o'clock and 1 o'clock right now.
Correct.
Okay.
And then the other tool that the Freemasons show is a square, and that's a 90 degree. That's the sun's relationship to the magnetic north.
Mm. You know, I was going to ask you what the significance of the letter L was.
That's the L.
Let's talk about that for a minute. I've always thought that was so interesting because of the language, again, involved. Elevate, elder, I don't know, there's so many. Electricity, angel, you have the EL at the end of the word and things like that. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, if you draw up the compass and basically give an equator to both of those,
mm-hmm.
then you have two letter L apart from each other, and that's the open mouth of the crocodile or the dragon.
Mm.
And when they go parallel,
parallel, yeah,
to L, then we're in trouble. And so a lot of the words, you know, the letter E, basically, if you can visualize that we have three lines interconnected, as I talk about the three power lines, galactic, solar, and Earth equator, if those three get connected, that's the letter E. So a lot of these things came out of the ancient secrets, and I don't even know if secret societies are aware of it on a general level. The few people I talked to certainly weren't. And one thing I'd like to mention, you know, in mythology, you find the last 12 of the hero's journey. And you find that with Christ having 12 disciples before his death. He's got 12 hours on the cross. King Arthur has the 12 nights.
Mm-hmm.
Hercules has the 12 labors. And initially I thought that that may be the last 12 years of the Maya calendar, you know, counting from 2000 to 2012.
Right.
But further research showed that that's not true. The last 12 years, as I understand, is the last 12 years of going through this mountain, the sacred mountain. So we have this 36 years travel, which started in 1980, and it completes its journey in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last 12 years started then in 2004. What do we find in 2004? We find that after 120 years of not doing what it did in 2004, the planet Venus, the goddess, goes in front of the sun when the sun is in between the horns of the bull.
Yeah, there was a Venus transit, yeah.
Venus transit. And that's basically one of the secrets of the ancients, because what they were counting is the around the 12,000 year cycles, half cycles of the precession, and that's what we set our clock up on. We have 212 hours in a 24-hour day. Mm-hmm. And so the Egyptians marked her with the open horns of a bull, which if you stand with your back to the sun and looking at the earth, you will see the two axes almost like the horns of the earth. And so they placed the bull to the east. And so in the Bible, we have the bull sacrifice. Mm. The Latinos, even the pre-Christian Latinos, sacrificed the bull. The Mediterraneans jumped over the bull. And there were two brothers in most mythology who were fighting the bull. One of them died, the one who was to the south. Because as the north shifted across the bull, the lower brother died. And we see some remnants of that in Cain and Abel in the Bible, but it's better described in Epic of Gilgamesh, which is the Babylonian story from Iraq.
Right.
And you have two brothers. And interestingly, those who follow mythology, we have two brothers in the Mayan creation story of the Popol Vuh.
Mm-hmm.
And these two brothers take a road to the west.
Yeah, the hero twins. Yeah.
The hero twins. And there are two meanings to that. One is the two brothers are Perseus or Mitra above the bull. That's the Nordic brother. And the southern one is Orion. And a bull to the east with the shoulder blade, the seven sisters of Pleiades representing the east direction. And so a lot of these, you know, when they ask Christ, you know, most of us have that sort of teaching in our past, Judeo-Christian teaching. So they ask Christ, when is the end days coming? Well, he says when the two brothers start fighting. And so a lot of less sophisticated preachers started picking countries. I think it's when England fought Germany or when Lebanese fought Israel, or, you know, you can pick anything you want. But the ancients did not teach local strife. They thought about cosmology. And I think if you have that in mind, it's easier to understand the story.
Right.
So the last 12 started in 2004, and we see that in the Egyptian mythology with the goddess standing and having horn on her head and a sun in between. That's what happened in 2004. The goddess went in front of the sun when it was in between the horns of the bull. And so she's the first angel. So the hieroglyphic sign, and you see that with cowboys, you know, probably unknowingly, I don't know, the cowboy up, and then they show the horns of the bull.
Mm.
Well, interestingly, in Egypt, they spell that O-O-P, and they say oop, which is, the meaning of that is opening, opening of the last 12 years. So maybe it's 0 year, maybe it's first year, but what becomes interesting to me at this time is that it's always the fourth angel in Hindu mythology, in Egyptian descriptions, and even in chapter 16 of Revelation, it says the fourth angel poured his ball on the sun so fire can proceed and burn up the enemy. So the question becomes, will that repeat itself this year or next year? And if it does, certainly nobody is out there advocating that. And, you know, everybody's waiting for the 2012 ending, but remember that the ending in December 21st or 22nd, near Christmas, is the birth of the new sun,
right,
not
right.
the death of the old.
Right, it's sort of the beginning of a new cycle, the end of an old one. Right?
Exactly. So you have to ask yourself, how does the Bible describe some of these events? And, you know, there are earthquakes, there are maybe sun eruptions, there is a 3 or 3.5 year darkness before that new prince is crowned.
All right, so when we talk about this, we haven't really mentioned the sacred cosmic marriage, and this is related to this potential sunspot eruption that you perhaps see in the next couple of years.
Correct.
What's the sacred cosmic marriage?
Well, those of you who have the Epic of Gilgamesh at home, and I'm talking about the edition from Gallery Kovacs book. She's a professor of mythology, and not too sure if she's in Oklahoma or where. I think it's Oklahoma Press who put it out, and University Press. But in that book, they talk about the sacred cosmic marriage as cosmology. And then as I started looking at the Egyptians, I found the same sort of ritual that started July 26th, maybe, where the first angel, let's say, Hathor, the goddess, goes to marry the prince. And it's a two-week course, and actually they reenacted it by having boats pulled on the Nile against the flow of the Nile. And for 2 weeks, there were these big celebrations, which we still have. If you look at the New Orleans, what do they celebrate? You know, Mardi Gras with the king, always shown with the blonde hair.
Yeah.
And then you see the same thing with the Greeks. You see the same thing with the Egyptians. And if you try to find a golden blonde hair person in there, you'd have a hard time. You know, but that's not what it means. It wasn't a Nordic blonde person who got to be a king because he was so different. It was the son of the sun with its golden hair color of the sun. And so we have that same celebration, the sacred cosmic marriage in Mardi Gras, except we lost the meaning.
Well,
basically, the young prince who comes from the sun marrying planet Venus. And, you know, in our country, there are some of these ancient folklore stories about this beautiful queen who's going to get married, or you know, princess basically, who's going to get married, and they always describe her as she was so beautiful, you could look at the sun but not her. And I said, wait a minute, how come you can look at the sun but not her? So I never understood that until I went to the Egyptians, where they say she was Hathor in the west, accepting the souls of the dead. And so, again, we go back to Venus transit, the first one being in 2004. The last one of this pair is 2012. And if those two happened in the east, then staying stationary with that picture, when will Venus be in the west? And that's 2008. And actually, Venus will be perfectly in the center of the sun at that point. So the unseen forces that move her in the center at that time. And certainly you have to count how many pairs you go before this happens. And in 12,000 years, rounded numbers, 120 years in between the pairs, it's 100 pair. Then you ask yourself, well, how come it's not in the Bible? Well, it is. How many wives Jacob had? He had two wives. The first one he didn't want. So she's the harlot. The second one, Rachel, Raquel meaning E-W-E, you know, the wife of the lamb, I guess, or the ram.
And the E-L again, Rachel.
Rachel, exactly. And so, you know, how many years did Jacob wait to get the second wife? Well, he was made to wait 7 years in between the two wives. Well, exactly, that's how long it takes for Venus to go second time around in front of the sun.
Now there's another Venus transit in 2012, though, right?
Right, June 2012.
June of 2012.
And that's the Virgin.
How does that tie into your theory here?
Well, if the Virgin will have a son born in around Christmas time, 2012, then maybe that's the clue there. And I don't want to be too graphic with the two axes, but the Egyptians show an upside-down woman in the tomb of Ramses. And those of you who are interested, some of it you can see on my website, but also if you get the book, Ancient Egyptian Book of the Dead, from Eric Hornung, he shows an enigmatic painting from Ramses IX's tomb. And he says, well, I don't understand what's going on in there, because these are not hieroglyphics. They show a circle with a five-pointed star inside, and it's upside down, and on the bottom there's a sun on her head.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically when the upside-down female has the two legs open, she's not a good girl, because you're not sitting like that. I mean, people heard that from their mother. You know, so she's certainly not acting like a virgin, but when the legs are closed, that's when the two axes became parallel. And it might sound a little, you know, weird for some people hearing it for the first time, but those ancients had a good sense of humor.
That's for sure. All right, let's see here. Well, I'll tell you what, we've got about a few minutes before we get to the bottom of the hour. I think we'll take a break here. And we'll do a short one, maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and then we'll come back and we'll have about 20 or 25 minutes where we can talk about some of the real world stuff. I want to talk to you about the sun right now, these days, if you watch it, and if you're familiar with the satellites and all that sort of stuff, okay?
Yes.
All right, back in just a few minutes, everybody. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Willie Gaspar. You can find out information about Dr. Willie on the web at celestialclock.com, celestialclock.com. And you can link there always from my site over there at mikehagan.com. And don't forget to check us out streaming on the web, kopn.org, all right? Okay, it is, like I said, just about 1:28 in the a.m. now, closing in on 1:29, I guess, on the 13th of March. And we'll be back in just a few minutes, all right? This is another song from a band called Anchando. And this one is called Picture. Back in a minute, all right? It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. Check Willie out on the web at celestialclock.com while you're listening to this music. And you can look at some of the writings and some of the imagery that goes along with the conversation, okay? Back in a few minutes.
Picture just too long.
That's Picture, one more from Anchando. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We've got Dr. Willie Gaspar on the line with us from his home in Santa Fe, I think. Isn't that right, Willie?
Close to it.
Not too far from Santa Fe, okay. And we appreciate you staying up late in the night with us and spending some time and sharing your ideas about all this stuff with us.
Well, thanks for having me. I hope I don't scare your listeners away with your ideas.
I don't think you do, and I think that it's great that we are able to talk about it. You know, you and I were talking off the air earlier about how everyone's sort of trying to figure out what's going on, and nobody, you know, the way you present it is very reasonable, because you don't say this is the way it is. This is, you know, ideas that you've come up with from your experience and through your research, and it's, you know, you have good reason to believe that this or that may happen, but gosh, you said it to me yourself, that nobody knows what's really going on.
Exactly.
So I think it's great that we're able to talk about it and try to parse it out, and all these different ideas sort of come together. And, you know, I was going to ask you before the break about actual observations of the sun. I'm interested in the sun myself, and I have been for years, and I love, ever since the SOHO satellites have been in operation, I've loved to, you know, get on my computer and look at the imagery that comes from those telescopes. Do you do something like that, or what? And maybe what are your interpretations of what you've actually seen over the last few years, as opposed to maybe what you've thought about with regard to the ancient mythology and all that stuff?
Well, you know, I'm more of a layperson with my telescope, and I do look at the stars and the sun and try to make sense of it, but there are certainly better writings about the sun than mine. One of them is Mitch Batros, who I consider a friend,
mm-hmm.
and he put out Solar Rain, and it's a great book. It gives a lot of information about the sun-earth connection, and not being an expert on it, so I just go back into mythology. But one of the things my wife told me in a break, he says, you know, you start these ideas and never finish them. But there's so much to talk about.
Huh.
But one of her favorites is 666.
Huh.
And she asked me not to forget to mention that.
Okay.
As we make our calculations, because the Bible says, you know, those who understand, calculate, and that's the word they use. People can look it up. It says, calculate the number of the beast. And it's 666. So we know the beast is the dragon, which sits in between the two points of the compass up in the north. But how do we come up with this 666? And it's very simple. You know, using the tools of the Masons, we have the 90 degree. And then out of that, you deduct the 23.4. get 66.6 degrees.
And the 23.4, again, is the difference between
magnetic north and polar north.
Right, right, okay.
And in between sits the beast, which is the dragon.
90 minus 23.4 is 66.6.
Right.
Huh, interesting.
And, you know, those of you who are interested in, again, the language part, just look at the Egyptian word for the sun god, Ra,
mm-hmm.
being present in Draco, the dragon, right after D, the male force, comes Ra. So there's a clue there. Then the axis shift happens, and that's one of the big secrets of Judeo-Christianity, is the point where the axis line, the red road, shifted through the path of the sun, which is the ecliptic.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the constellation Cancer, the crab, with another Ra in it. And then you have the stars named Northern Donkey, Southern Donkey, the End. And trust me, they're not talking about the end of the animal crab. They're talking about another end that happened in the past. And then you have the claw. But what's interesting to me, I mentioned the eastern direction defined by the bull or the cow, the sacred cow. And then the donkey is the star in the crab, which cuts the head of Hydra.
And
if it's not Hydra, you can call it Cobra or Viper, which is Vipera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what is all that Ra doing there? But what's interesting to me is that we go walk by and see the nativity scene, the birth of Christ. And if you see the ancient painters from the 14th, 15th, 16th century, when the earth was flat, the donkey and the cow is closest to Christ than any of the other visitors, including the three kings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the sacred couple, but then the donkey's face is right in there, and the cow is right in there, even if it's inside a place. You say, how did you let those two animals get in there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's astronomy. And so this is how the secrets are hidden, and more and more of us have to go back to that. And in my book, I show from an astronomy book the three lines that I talked earlier, galactic, solar, and Earth equator, transposed on the sun. And guess what? It makes up a fish shape. But because there are three lines, it's a one extra line. But when the axis shifts, it does become a fish. But also it becomes the great fish or the whale, which mouth closes and Jonah gets stuck inside the belly of the whale.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a hard time as a scientist, as a spiritual person, with people who take that literally. You know, it's okay to say, you know, these are sacred writings. They are. But please, nobody lives in a belly of the whale for 3 days. But if you look at it as a cosmology or astronomy, it'll light up and explain itself.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. What you mentioned earlier, that the flood, the great flood that's talked about in so many of these ancient religions and mythologies, that this was a result of the last time this happened, perhaps? Are you familiar with the work of Dr. Paul LaViolette?
Yes.
Yeah, his work, I'd say, supports your theories. I would.
I think he identifies the same time period,
mm-hmm.
About 11,500 years for that to happen. And there's another book written by two scientists called Cataclysm by, I think, Professor Allen and forgot the other name, but... it's out there and available, and they compile pretty good evidence for that and the time frame. And, you know, those of us who sort of understand these names like Holocene, the era that we live in, the Holocene officially started 11,500 years ago. So what started it? What was the change? And will it do it again?
Mm-hmm.
In the next few years. So, and I don't talk fear, you know. I think this universe is put together pretty well by the Creator. So I'm not afraid of what's in store for most of us if some bigger catastrophe happens, because maybe this is the bad side of the dimensions, and on the other side it's better, or we are traveling to somewhere else. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm not talking out of fear, more like if something happens and people survive it, it would be nice to survive it with some scientific understanding of how the universe is working and what might come to us periodically and how to warn the next generation if it happens now, instead of blaming it on an angry God.
Yeah, you know, it's and in fact it seems like that's what our ancestors were trying to do. They were trying to encode these ideas in many different ways. Lots of times, you know, they were so smart, like you mentioned earlier, that they realized that because of language and because of the way, you know, culture changes things, that they would have to do something that was pretty tricky in order for it to make it through, and you'd have to be pretty sharp to figure it out, too.
Sort of, they kept it in the plain view of everybody with those animal symbols, and maybe we needed the science to understand what they tried to show. You know, it's sort of, to me, it's a little bit ridiculous when we look at the Egyptians, and they built those huge pyramids, which had to take some serious technology. And they built not one, but several of them. And all over the world, cultures did that. The Mayans did that. And then we have those paintings of people walking around half naked with goats and cows and the donkeys. And our conclusion, you know, the Egyptologists say, you know, these people, they really...
Hello there, Willie. Hey, Willie, I think I lost you there for a second. You still there?
I'm here.
Okay, good.
So basically what I'm saying is that the Egyptians, with their simplistic depictions, maintained a very advanced technological scientific message to us, and putting them into explanation that they were barbarians and dragged a huge stone is to me... a poor understanding.
Yeah, and insulting in a way.
Insulting, yes.
And the Maya in a similar fashion.
Correct.
What, you know, the Maya followed these solar cycles really closely, but they also followed the Venus cycles.
Yes.
And again, we've got the 2012 Venus transit, we've got all the stuff that's happening between now and then. You know, it's hard to, you know, the more you get familiar with the stuff, it's hard to say that something's not going on.
Right. And, you know, returning back to the letter L, Ra is written as an arm in a 90 degree. And we go to the, let's say, European traditions, and they had the king's arm cut off and carried around, and that was a tradition. And then so that arm is in the name of Ra. R is a mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say Ra, the writing is a mouth, which is the letter R in Egypt, and the arm is the letter A, and that's Ra.
Mm-hmm.
So why a mouth? Is, again, by now we know, is the mouth of the crocodile up north or the mouth of the big fish on the west. And, you know, that gets closed. And, you know, people who speak Spanish recognize that there is the Ra word in brazo, arm, and then the elbow being the center point is the Kodo, which again is supposed to be written with K-O, because that's the shape we are getting out of that equation.
Hmm.
But,
can I ask you a question about, and it might be a stretch, but I was going to ask how this sort of translates into worldly things, geopolitical events and things like that. I think about the country Israel, and I think of the way that word is put together with the words Ra and El.
Correct.
Together. I mean, is there a reason to talk about any of this stuff? Is it connected to, you know, to current events or anything like this?
I think we play it out. And sure, there's the Middle East in flames as the time is approaching. But again, we have to go back to ancient languages and recognize that IS is the word of God in Sanskrit. So we see that in Babylonia with Istara, where the word star comes from.
Hmm.
Even in our language, Iskola means school, and the English has a way of cutting the I off and maintaining the S. But you see that word escuela in Spanish. But the IS is the original word for God in Sanskrit. And then you ask yourself, where did that come from? And basically, if you go on a website of a good person, an astrologist, Lunar Planner is his website. He talks about the Venus transit. He describes that the first Venus writes a phonetic I, and the second Venus transit, or the end, is a phonetic S. In my opinion, because between the two Venuses is the emergence of God or his force, they maintain that word IS for that, and some languages made it into a JS, because a phonetic J is very similar to a phonetic I.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have JS for Joseph, for Jesus, for Joshua, and a lot of other biblical heroes. And, you know, the Ra, as you mentioned, is the Egyptian sun god, and people should not be too surprised, because most of our biblical history started in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with Moses being second to the throne after Ramses, whose name starts with a Ra,
mm-hmm.
and actually written with a sun. So these are the secrets, and you know, it's hard to explain every bit of it, but people need to go and have an open mind and start breaking these secrets open before it's too late to understand.
And, well, I guess the question, one of the questions that people are asking is, if it's something that's happened before, and once you recognize it as a possibility, what are you supposed to do?
I think the easy way is if you go with the first wave, I guess, and not become the remnant or the left behind sort of people. And those who say, well, you know, I don't have to worry about it because the rapture will come, again, I have to point their direction to the Hindu myths, where the rapture word is used for Shiva, the sun god, rapturing in a sort of cosmic sex scenario at the site of the beautiful Venus.
Mm. There's another Ra word too, rapture.
Right. Hey, you're getting the gist of this one. But sure, I mean, this is how it's hidden. And it's hard for us to accept. I always use the symbology of, let's say, us humans being the earth and taking a shower. Do I take a shower every 24 hours because I'm angry at the bacteria under my armpits? No, you know, I take a shower to cleanse. And, you know, I mean, a few bacteria will survive, and next day I have to take a shower again. And so basically the remnants will be those few resistant bacteria that remain behind, and probably will go through some hardship. But, you know, again, in a big scenario, the Creator made us a beautiful world. He, she, it made it such where we have a purpose. We may have several experiences in different forms, in different dimensions, I believe. And so, no fear of the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
If you accept that God is perfect, and he's not doing this to punish us, but he's worried about recharging the geodynamo of the earth, because if he doesn't do it, the magnetic field is disappearing. So he's more worried about recharging that dynamo, and that's how I look at it.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a little bit about the conference that you guys participated in last October, I think it was.
Right.
You want to talk a little bit about that and maybe anything that you have upcoming that you might want to mention?
We had the Earth Changes Conference in Taos in October of 2006, and the turnout was less than we expected. We had some good audience and made some good friends. I don't know if we achieved what we wanted. Certainly John Major Jenkins was there, and he's a great speaker, and he's deeply spiritual, gave a different view that I would give. And Mitch Buttress was there talking about the Sun-Earth connection and a few others. So it was a good conference. I don't know if we're going to repeat it, but my next project is a documentary about the World Tree. And it's a three-part series. Dr. Jose Jaramillo is putting it together from San Diego. And the first part will be about Don Alejandro's life, who's a Mayan elder.
Mm-hmm.
And the second part will be based loosely on my book, The Celestial Clock, and it's titled The World Tree. And I'm making the narrative to sort of show some of these things that I'm talking about as astronomy and the World Tree being axis mundi, the Earth axis,
mm-hmm.
Leading to the galactic center. And actually Friday, my wife and I are going down to Palenque and look at the pyramids with that group and maybe start doing a little bit of filming also. So look for that documentary in the fall.
Wonderful. Well, let me ask you one more question really quickly here before we go. You mentioned at the beginning of the program the root word shah, S-H-A-H, I think it was.
Right.
You know, we talk a lot about shamanism on this program, too. Is there a connection with that, with those words?
It has to be.
Hmm.
And in some languages, like, for example, the Persian, shah is the prince. And a lot of the other languages, it's S-A. And
mm-hmm.
one can sit down and basically start writing down the words that relate to sacred or saint or sacrament.
Yes.
And, you know, basically if you visualize the picture of Sa in the west, K of the earth to axis, and Ra, the sun on the east, you get Sakra.
Mm.
So amazing. That's Sacramento.
Haha, wonderful.
And so this is how things are hidden, and I hope I got some people's attention to sit down and start making up some words.
Wow. It's wonderful stuff, and thank you so much for doing the work that you've done, and your books are wonderful. Everybody, we've been talking with Willie Gaspar, and he's got a couple of books, one called The Celestial Clock, and another called Sacred Cosmic Marriage. Are those the only two books you've written, Willie, or do you have other stuff out there?
Yes, no, those are the two. I have a couple of other projects going on, but they're not out yet.
All right, well, for now, those are the two, and you can find information about those books, and there's a number of really interesting papers that Dr. Gaspar's written on his website over there at celestialclock.com, and you can link there from my site as well from here on out, and this program will be up in the archives very shortly in the next day or so. So anyway, it's been wonderful talking with you, and I've learned a lot myself, and I appreciate the work that you're doing, and I hope that you know, you continue to do it and keep collaborating with all these other guys, and maybe between now and who knows when we'll get a clue about what the heck is happening on this planet.
Well, next time you come this way, look me up in the mountains. We're up at 8,000 feet.
Wonderful.
In a concrete dome.
And
lots
got
food and water.
You've got a telescope there too, right?
I have two telescopes, and you know, you're welcome.
How cool.
If the time comes, look for the gold star. That's the first one that speaks to us, Satan.
Wow.
And that's June 21st to mid-July when it sort of lines up
on the ecliptic in constellation Chariot.
Of this coming year?
Either this year or next year.
Or next year,
so
2007 or 8, yeah.
Look at that spaceweather.com in those times.
All right, we'll do it, and I'll stay in touch with you, okay, Willie?
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much
for
having me.
Take care of yourself, all right?
Okay.
All right, everybody, Willie Gaspar on the web at www.celestialclock.com. And as I said, you can link there from my site from here on out, okay? All right, it's Mike. You've been listening to Radio Orbit. We got about 3 minutes to finish things up here. One more from Anchando. Stick around. We got Crash Landing with Ruth coming up in just a couple minutes. She'll be playing some who knows what for you after this program, and she'll do it for the next few hours. And don't forget to come on back next week. We'll have Dr. Jose Arguelles and the music of Canal. So thanks, everyone, for participating in the program tonight. Had a great time, and I hope you did, too. We'll talk to you all next week with Jose Arguelles. And in the meantime, like I said, stick around, listen to Ruthie, play some good tunes for you with Crash Landing. It's Mike. You've been listening to KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, on the web, kopn.org. And for me, MikeHagan.com.
Again, I clear my head and clear my mind. Now I'm really going fine. I'm not wasting no more time. Lights out, watching now. Hear me now, light out, feel me now, light down, ba-da-ba-ba-da, light out, walk me now, light out, hear me now.